You're very welcome back to the programme. Thank you so much for all of your texts and comments so far this morning. Obviously, it's on pretty emotive, controversial topics. Cost of living crisis, low temperature warnings in the winter as people can't afford fuel. Yeah, brings it home, doesn't it? Best of luck to Jim and the lads on Sunday from all at Finn Harps. From all at Finn Park. Also, good luck to the youngest Finn Harps team in the club's history, who are looking to go 6 games unbeaten at UCD this evening. It's funny, Kevin McHugh's his touch is starting to take hold there now. That is the seniors that are playing UCD, isn't it? Burning. I read that one, and I read that one also. Bad Eddie was dumped on the beach. It's rubbish and should be taken away. People having an emotional connection is bizarre. Well, hey, forget emotions. What about I might have a commercial tourism connection, because it is value, it's money, it's a tourism attraction, it is everywhere. Search Bad Eddie, go to Google Images and you will see thousands of pictures of it. But Nicholas is of the same view. Bad Eddie should go, kids will get hurt climbing on it. Hard to unite that kind of hatred. Yeah, indeed. And maybe I just my concern is that it's just a new generation. It's the next generation that watch on and think, oh, this is great crack. This is what you do. This is how you get on with your neighbours. And there are conversely things on the other side as well. By the way, if I could put it to you like that, I'm just not. It just so happens that the focus would be on what's happening in the north at this time of the year, but we talk about other things at other times of the year as well. If I held a bonfire and I burnt a British flag and an effigy of the British suggestion, I'd be done for it. I'll tell you, light a fire in Northern Ireland and stick an Israeli flag on the top of it and see how long you last. You'd be in prison in no time whatsoever, I would say. A caller says, my solution to the burning of pallets and tyres would be impose a carbon tax on the Orange Order or whoever organises or authorises the building. No government grant should be issued until the tax is paid. The tax should be attached to any property of the current head of the particular lodge in which the bonfires are lit. I'm not sure it's the Orange Order responsible for building them, but I get where you're coming from. I have 3 adult tickets for Upper Hogan. If anyone would like to swap with me for the lower tier, I had a procedure done this week and cannot walk up the steps. I'd be extremely grateful, haven't missed a match. Top Donegal. So that's someone with the adult tickets for Upper looking to swap them for lower. It could be difficult because the lower tickets were in huge demand and a lot of people were turning their nose up at the upper tickets until such time as they got the lower ones. But you never know. Someone might prefer the higher view. So if you have lower tickets and you want to swap them with this listener who has Upper Hogan stand tickets, let us know. Right. We have brilliant coverage of that game. In fact, we've had brilliant coverage. We've had brilliant coverage all week. We had Brendan Devaney. He was out and about. Sister Sarah's. Oshie and Kelly was out last night. And Karen Donna. It was great to be up in Karen Donna, as it always is. We always get a fantastic welcome there. It was a great show. The build-up continues, of course, throughout the weekend. And Oshin and the crew will be down bringing you live commentary of the game on Sunday against Meath. And we're really hoping that we're into our fourth All-Ireland. Parking in Dunfanaghy is terrible. How are the Gardaí and council allowing tables, chairs and flower spaces to take up parking? You can't park in the square at all. We're missing about 15 parking spaces. I want to do my recycling at the bottle bank and 2 cars were parked in front of it. I've tried 3 times now to go and I can't. My daughter has to go to Creasla to do it for me. I know a lot of locals are doing the Dun Stores delivery service as it's far handier than trying to get to a shop. I have to go to Creasla if I want to recycle and go to the pharmacy as there's no parking spaces. It's bad that I have to leave my own town to do anything. If I had tables and chairs out on my private road obstructing traffic, the council wouldn't be long telling me to move. How's this allowed? Okay, so is that businesses making use of that sort of shared space that's taking up parking spaces? I'm not quite sure. Let me know if that's something you have an opinion on. I recently had a hip replacement operation, says a listener, including myself. There were 6 of us in the ward. One of them had dementia. One couldn't get a bed in a community hospital. One of them was waiting to be transferred to a community care hospital, which kept being cancelled. So in that orthopaedic ward of 6 patients, 3 were in the wrong room. It's no wonder operations keep getting cancelled. The beds are used as waiting beds. There you go. Well, we do talk about pressures on the hospital. hospital, and there is absolutely no doubt more step-down care, be it home care packages, be it family available to care for people, or indeed in a hospital environment that's not an acute hospital. That's a big, big problem. Right, okay, what do you fancy doing at the start of August, Saturday the 2nd of August? Well, we've a great night out lined up for you. We've got Lou Lee Gooch, we've got Keith Fletcher. They're co-presenting a big party bingo night, and we have Marty Friel. So effectively, they're three hunks of Highland. I mean, if you're not even interested in bingo, I mean, three hunks. Never out of the gym, the three of them. Marty Muscles Friel. We've got Lee the Abs Gooch and the Marathon Man, Keith Fletcher. I mean, talk about eye candy. If that's not enough, I don't know what is. But anyway, it's in Jackson's Hotel Bella Buffet on Saturday the 2nd of August, and we're turning up the heat with the big Highland Summer Bingo Party. So you will hear party tunes, there'll be tropical vibes, there'll be a wild night of bingo, silly fun games, big cash prizes, all in the heart of beautiful Bella Buffet, and a top prize of €1,000 up for grabs. Now, you can dress to impress too. Get all done out in your Hawaiian shirts, your hula skirts or your beachwear. Think of the darts, you know, that kind of crack, the fun. And get ready for a summer party like no other. So if you're up for it, there'll be dances, offs, crowd challenges. You can win cocktail shots. There'll be summer anthems and drink promos. It's going to be great fun. It's over 18s and tickets are €25 plus a booking fee. And you can go to eventbrite.com or in fact go to Highland Radio Socials for more info there. So maybe you want to go with a friend, go on your own, or go with a group of people. It's going to be a night not to forget. Saturday, the 2nd of August. Get your babysitter booked now. Go and have some fun. Now, we're joined on the programme by Independent Councillor Jimmy Brogan. Jimmy, good morning to you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Morning, Guy. How's it going?
Good, good, good. Now, we heard you on the news and just wanted to tease it out a little further with you on this programme. You're calling on the Health Minister and the HSC to address staffing issues at Killybegs Community Hospital. It's led to 13 short-term beds being closed at the facility. Now, that's a big, big hit, Jimmy.
Yeah, 13 beds. It's probably about a third of the short-term beds in the hospital, in the community hospital. So it's imperative that they're opened as soon as possible. You know, I've been in touch with a few people and they were telling me these beds were closed. So that's why I contacted the HSE just for an update on what the actual situation was. You know, so I got a response then just the other day, and they just said that they're working on it says once approval has been given to recruitment. The older persons management team will work closely with the human resources to recruit the staff, you know, so it just sort of looks like they're not putting in a big effort at the moment to recruit the staff, you know. I know there has been some efforts to recruit staff in Killybegs and other hospitals, but I think they just need to up the pace a bit and make sure these staff are recruited. You know?
And what are these beds used for? Would it be sort of step-down care for me for the Letterkenny or Sligo University hospitals to free up beds in the acute hospitals and I suppose allow people to continue their recovery closer to home? Are they used in any other areas as well?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, most of it will be step-down beds. Supposed to be people will be, needed short-term respite or something like, you know, that would be a position plus. Sometimes just people, if they're not feeling well, they need somewhere to go. You know, they don't need to be in Letterkenny or Sligo, but they just need to be in a sort of a healthcare setting, like, you know, so that's really what the beds are used for, you know. So they need to be opened as soon as they can. Like, these beds have been closed for a long time because last year they done some works on the hospital. It was called the Essential Infection Prevention and Control Measures, you know. Now, they closed a number of beds, and I've been on to them a few times for an update on what was happening. These beds originally were supposed to open back last October 2024. After Christmas, got onto them again, and they weren't open. And then in March, I contacted them again, and I was told that admissions had recommenced in Killybegs Community Hospital. You know, so... but they didn't tell me at the time there was a staff shortage. They said admissions had recommenced, but they didn't say there was going to be short 13 left short, you know. So, and now there is also beds closed in Donegal Town Community Hospital because of the same sort of works that's going on at the minute there. So, and now that's okay because they've given a time frame for the works to be done and for the beds to be taken back into action again then. So, but it's just that the community hospital in Killybegs, and it covers a wide area, you know, from Glencoe Kill up through Killybegs, Kilcar, Killybegs, all the way up to Rucklass, Knockinelly, and obviously with Donegal Town Hospital not at full capacity, there may be an overflow needed as well. Like,
you
know, so,
yeah, I mean, it's not a bit wonder our hospitals are under pressure when you factor this in. I'm not sure if we're into the next year for budget for home help. The budget was exhausted earlier this year, and that means, of course, there were very few, if any, new packages available or extension to packages. You know, if someone had Hope Help and their hours were extended, that wasn't being fulfilled because the money simply had run out. You know, so there, and the problems that we're talking about here, again, and I'm sorry to sound like a scratched record, you won't experience this in Dublin because they employ far more in the private sector, and of course their hospitals are better resourced. So this is another geographical quirk of living in Donegal here, having access to this type of stay-at-home or step-down care.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what happens in Dublin. It doesn't concern me that much. My concerns are for Donegal here, like, you know. So, but I know home helps are another massive issue, and this has been going on for years and years where there's a lack of home help. You know, I know I've been working with people, and you get somebody will be coming out of hospital and they'd be entitled to it and they'd be granted home help, but they can't get people in to fill the positions, you know. And it's all to do with the terms and conditions that home help have to endure in their employment. And it's, you know, I think a lot of the home help, if the HSE would employ them directly rather than using some of the private companies, you know, because at the end of the day, private companies are there to make money, and that's fair enough. That's what their job is, you know. But, you know, they're... their shareholders are the major concern.
No, I do hear you, but I mean, at the end of the day, in other counties, and the only reason I'm interested in Dublin because it gives us a bar as to where we're at, and they do employ more private companies, and there are people that get home care packages straight away, and whatever policy we're employing, there are people listening to this show and their families that aren't getting those home care packages. And the HSE here, they seem to have a specific way of doing it compared to other HSE areas, and it's leaving a deficit there.
Yeah, no, there definitely is a definite deficit in home help. You know, and that's, like I say, that's gone on for years. That's not new, you know. So, and it's not, despite all the promises and sound bites, it's never actually been addressed properly by the HSE or by the government, you know. So we just need to step up. And like I say, you know, if home helps were treated properly in the proper terms, conditions, and properly, you know, proper, make sure they were got a 40-hour a week, you know, I think a lot of people would stay in home help. A lot of people go into home help, but they realise it's not the job for them shortly after they start, you know, and it's not worth their while, a lot of them tell me.
All right, Jimmy,
so a lot of them leave it.
Thank you very much for that. We're going to contact the HSE and get the official line from them on it, and then hopefully get a timeline, and then that's something we can keep an eye on. But of course, you're working hard on this yourself as a local rep. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. See you soon. That's Councillor Jimmy Brogan there. Any views on that? Maybe you're in that area or affected by it. Maybe a loved one of yours unable to get back home into the local community. 086 60 25,000. That's our WhatsApp and text number. You can also call us on 074 91 25,000. A caller says, in fact, it's Vicky, there's people halfway through their defective concrete block rebuild and council aren't paying out quick enough, so builders are leaving the site. My mum and dad are pension age, one with Parkinson's. They're rebuilding a timber frame house super fast in order to get them in as soon as possible. Rented accommodation isn't even suitable, but all I could get... First invoice is in for €70,000 5 weeks ago, and another one for €100,000 due in, and we haven't received anything yet. The builder now ringing looking for payment of any kind, which we genuinely don't have. What is going to be of this? I'm worried sick with stress for months. I can't sleep worrying about money, right? And I get why you couldn't sleep worrying about money. So the builder has furnished bills of €170,000. They've yet to receive the money from the council to give it to the builder. The builder's going to keeping the pressure on them because they might think that keeps the pressure on the council. Have you any advice for Vicky? Vicky, the one thing I will say, not sleeping and work, I know this is easy to say, but it's something I've tried to work on myself. Your worrying is not going to fix it, right? So the best thing to do is, you know, bombard the council, get in touch with the likes of us. Don't be lying in bed worrying about it, because that's not going to change it. It will get resolved. But just try and look after yourself, because you're looking after two very important people, and it's important that you look after yourself, because they need you. So if you can, and I know it's easier said than done, if you can try and say, look, this is the situation, focus on bombarding the council and try and give yourself a break, if that makes any sense at all. But we will see what other listeners out there, have you experienced that? Do you know what's going on? Have you any advice for Vicky? Please get in touch, 086 60 25000. Okay. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. There was something coming up with the RNLI. Caroline, I forwarded it on to you. Could you print it off for me? It's a fundraiser that's coming up. It's in Mallon, I think. Okay, but to matters close to hand, Eimear Heaney, but not too close, not uncomfortably close, Eimear Heaney, Roma Community Development and Advocacy Worker. Good morning to you. How are you, Eimear?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Are you enjoying the weather?
I am.
It's nice, isn't it? It's not for everyone, though. I do be conscious of that. Sorry, you're also the advocacy worker with the Donegal Traveller Project, I should say. And what an honour. You've achieved a huge recent success at the 2025 Galway Film FLA. Tell me about it.
We have. So Donegal Travellers Project last year created a short documentary about the Roma community living in Donegal. We first got some funding in early 2024 through Creative Ireland with huge support from Andrew McNulty at Donegal County Council. And then from there, we hired or brought on a local creative team, filmmaker Joe Doherty and director Katie McLaughlin Robinson. And we also had members of our Roma staff, particularly David Kirpatchy, who serves as co-producer. So what we did was we essentially created a snapshot of the life that Roma and Donegal had in June and July of 2024. Mm-hmm. There was a few days of filming, but then a lot more work afterwards went into the editing.
It's always the way, editing. Isn't it?
Yeah. So in the end, we came out with a really, really beautiful piece that we were really, really happy with. So the director submitted it to Galway Film FLA. And it was an honour just to be selected to be screened there at all. But we also amazingly got nominated for an award. So we're really, really happy with it.
Yeah, because it's one thing you sort of leaning back with the finished product and going, oh, wow, we did well here, right? But it's when it's scrutinised externally that's where you get the real validation, isn't it, of course? And as you say, it's one thing to be selected. That's a great achievement in and of itself. But also to be in the running for an award is fantastic. So SAMROM is what it's called. You've described what it is. How is the story told? I mean, obviously, you know, you've got the Roma community, presumably, but also you've got our beautiful county. It's a marriage between mm-hmm. the two, is it?
It is, yeah. So SAMROM, that's Romanesque, the Roma language, and it means I am Roma. And I think that gives you a really good overview of what the documentary is about. It's it follows a narrative of the Roma living in Donegal. There is discussion about the challenges they face, but also I would say it's more than that, a celebration of Roma culture and everything Roma contribute to our communities. And there is as well input from Dr. Karen White, who has a long history of working with Roma, and she provides a kind of narrative as the Roma locally discuss the culture and identity and feelings of belonging and whatnot. Karen provides a kind of broader view of Roma experiences on a European context, but then even just a wider Ireland context as well.
Yeah, of course. And it's about their lives here, but also it I'm sorry to always talk about the platforms our beautiful county as well too, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, yeah. Again, anyone from Donegal who watches it, I think, will feel proud of the beautiful landscapes and scenery that the filmmakers got. It really is beautiful piece of work.
Obviously, this had to be what the Roma community themselves wanted portrayed. Can you give us an overshot of what they view their life as is in Donegal, if that makes sense?
You know, when watching the film, like I said, there is discussions of challenges, but what you'll find is that every person we interviewed had overwhelmingly positive things to say about living in Donegal. They, like I said, Roma are part of our community. They aren't outsiders by any degree, you know. And there's plenty of Roma locally who have born in Ireland, raised in Ireland, and Ireland is home. Mm-hmm. And this is compared to, you know, there would be folks as well in the who are interviewed who do speak about the difficulties of being made to feel like they don't belong.
Yeah, well, you come back to the narrative as well too, aren't you, mm-hmm. Potentially speaking?
Yeah, I think a challenge that Roma face in Ireland, or across Europe, you could say as well, is that there's a lot of discourse about Roma without including Roma in it. And what we're really proud of about this documentary is that the narrative was Roma-led. So the director and the filmmaker didn't go into this with an agenda about how the story they wanted to portray. They went, they interviewed Roma, and Roma led the way with the story that they wanted to tell.
Yeah, and what the county means to them, what belonging to the county looks like from their perspective, of course. We can't see it, can we? It's sort of, I mean, there's a trailer there, and the trailer looks lovely. It's obviously very well shot, but it's going to be available to view at the Galway Film Floor Documentary 2 category, which is not unusual, right? Because obviously there has to be a bit of exclusivity there, and then what comes from that is that it's been chosen and hopefully award-winning, and then you move into the next sort of public screening stage of it, I'd imagine. Emer, is that the plan?
Yeah. So we had an initial launch when we first finished it, and that was prioritised to make sure the Roma communities who participated could see the work that they participated in. And like you said, there is a certain degree of you have to kind of keep things under wraps until you find out the results of your entry into film competitions. But after the screening now at Galway Film Floor, we are certainly looking to do more screenings across the country.
For sure. Okay, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again then. The screening at the Galway Film Floor is the 13th of July 2025. Do we know when it's announced, if it's been successful? I mean, to be shortlisted is success, but in terms of actually winning the award?
We will know by Sunday evening,
in
my understanding. But like I said, I'd like to stress, we are just so honoured to have been nominated.
Yeah, this is all gravy, on top of what you've achieved. I mean, getting funding, getting it together, being happy with it, getting it shown. Like, this is everything is just extra layers of great stuff. Are you going down?
We are, yeah.
That'll be good.
Yeah, we've got a whole crew of us, not just myself and my colleagues, but members of the Roma community are coming down with us as well.
Okay, brilliant. Best of luck with that. It's on the 13th of July, which is Sunday, actually, okay? The year's going away on me. So that's Sunday, right? That's this weekend. Brilliant. So hopefully on Monday we'll be able to announce success. But as I say, there's success there already, okay? Winning it would be fantastic, but I think you have achieved something fantastic already. Thank you very much indeed, Emer. I do appreciate it. Best wishes to all. Safe journey. Emer Heaney, Roma Community Development and Advocacy Worker with the Donegal Traveller Project. We're back talking about animal attacks on livestock in Ireland. And it's a conversation we have minimum three times a year. And I've been having this conversation in one guise or another, be it back in my Northwest radio days, which is a lifetime away. And it doesn't seem to be that we're making any inroads into alleviating this often silent issue, because it affects the farming community and, you know, they can speak out, but because it doesn't broadly affect people, I don't think it gets the traction it deserves. But it has a huge impact on their livelihoods and a huge impact on the animals and what they have to go through as well. John Joe Fitzgerald is Vice President of the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association. John Joe, thanks for your time. Good to chat to you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
You know, when it's scattered across every county, every region, you know, individual farmers waking up to this. How bad a problem is it? How widespread, I suppose? We know, but listen, we have to have the conversation.
Yes, look, it's very widespread. I suppose it's a silent crime is the way to describe it. You take the amount of animals, I suppose, that have been affected in this country, going by figures in 2023 there, you're talking about 730 animals that have either been maimed or killed, torn to pieces by what you call it, by marauding dogs is the only way to describe it. Now, these are official figures from the Department of Housing, but we know from speaking to farmers on the ground, this figure could be three times higher than what they are quoting. And the worst thing about it is it's, you know, it's happening week after week. Farmers have got to the stage that they don't report it anymore because there was absolutely nothing being done about it. And you can imagine yourself now as having a family pet there, and you wake up in the morning, go outside the door and see your family pet torn to shreds. How does that affect you? How does that affect you mentally? This is what farmers are going through every day of the week, 365 days of the year. And there was one guy there that I met after the 8th of December last year, right up. I kept in contact him right up until the end of February. And I spoke to him one day, and this was 2 weeks after the previous meeting I had with him. And the guy looked absolutely wrecked, shattered. And I asked him, are you feeling okay? And he said, John Joe, he says, every night, he says, since the dog attack, I keep waking up. If I hear a dog barking, I head downstairs, grab the gun, run out into the field, and just to see if my animal's being attacked again by dogs. So the mental stress that this is causing farm families up and down this country is absolutely unreal.
Now, John Joe, and we know responsibility moved to the Department of Agriculture at the start of last month. It should be a smooth enough transfer. We did hear the ads going out, you know, it's not your dog. Sorry, it's not your dog's fault. It's yours. I think they ran through June, if my memory serves me correctly. But other than that, other than a couple of adverts, like, what else is being done or what else could be done?
Well, look, what we're looking for, and it's something new, I suppose. Well, it's been mentioned with years, but look, it's all moved to the Department of Agriculture now. We'll have a centralised national database for dogs, and that will incorporate the dog licence, microchipping, but something new that we are looking for as a farming organisation, a DNA sample to be taken from every dog in this country. And the simple reason we are asking for that is when the farmer gets to the field and his animals are dead and torn to pieces, the dogs have left and we have no way of tracing those dog owners or that dog. So if we have the DNA samples taken, at least if there is an attack on your farm animals, we can test the saliva and the cuts and tears and go back to our national database and able to trace the owners.
How robust is that database, though? Because, you know, the dog has to be connected to the owner. You know, what is the chipping uptake? How, you know, how compliant are people? I'm just thinking that I would say the majority of these attacks are from complacent or negligent dog owners. Are they following all the other rules that might lead the dog back to them?
No, and that's the biggest problem. It's a cohort of dog owners there, a small minority of dog owners that are not taking responsibility for their dogs. They're probably having their dogs microchipped or even a dog license for it, because going by official figures there's less than 200,000 dogs in this country that have been that have dog license. And we know from government officials and stuff and dealing with the Department of Housing, there is anywhere between 600,000 and 800,000 dogs in this country. So, and on top of that, I spoke to a retired dog warden there. He was in County Kerry. And he told me, John Joe, I brought a lot of cases to courts about fines and everything. And the honest truth, to tell you straight out, he says, the whole lot of them, John Joe, were thrown out. He says, the judge felt sorry for the fellow that owned the dog. Mm. And he says, what message does that send out then? When you have people being brought to court and you can go by official figures there from the Department of Housing, 1,900 people were fined in 2023. There was only 630 of those that actually paid the fines. So,
well, that would point to a high level of enforcement, John Joe, really, to some extent, right? I know it's not near enough. Well, that's a lot of people before the court. So why is the penny not dropping then?
I'll give you another example of it now. There's a lot of people before the courts, but if the judge feels sorry for the dog owner And the poor warden that's there then wish he had never brought the case to court because it's not been dealt with and it's been thrown out. Mm. I'll give you an example there. I've heard from a farmer up in County Wicklow there. He shot a marauding dog on his land that was crossing a river. He followed that dog because the dog was injured right into the house or the property that the guy that owned the dog. This went to court. It went to, when it was in court, the solicitor for the fellow that owned the dog asked your man the question, did you take your eyes off that dog from the time you shot it until the time it went into the house? He says, I didn't. I followed right the way through. Did you cross over a road? He says, I did. Well, did you look left and right when you crossed over that road? He says, I did. Well, then you took your eyes off that dog. Mm. The court case was thrown out. And on top of that, then, that poor guy that shot the dog, he had to pay the expenses for bringing that dog to the what you call the vet and everything else.
Yeah.
So if the court is not willing to deal with these and only give them a slap on the wrist, what message does that send out to us?
Because it's seen as an oversight. Unless you're a repeat offender, you know, the adverts did say it's your responsibility, not the dog's. But when you go in front of the judge and you go, oh, well, it was just this and it was just that and it was just the other, you know, I mean, obviously, it's not really the responsibility of the owner. The dog ends up getting the blame. Your organisation is calling for a number of things which seem fair. Mandatory licensing, microchipping and DNA sampling. All that's invaluable, actually, in case a human got bit, let alone what might happen to animals. A single central database under the Department of Agriculture, which also would make a lot of sense. It would complement point one. Legislation banning non-working dogs from hills and farmlands. Now we're getting into the potential sticky wicket here, John Joe. I mean, owners are already banned from taking their dogs onto the beach. They'd be banned then from having them in or around, I presume, you know, farms and farmland and from hills. There's going to be a big pushback on that suggestion, I'd suggest.
Not really. To say on beaches, the blue flag beaches are right at certain times of the year, periods of the year, dogs are banned from there. But from what we understand, dogs are allowed to run free on beaches in this country, but they have to be under factual control. Now, they need somewhere to go. There can be parks developed for it. There is what you call state agencies there that have a pile of land, the forestry sector and stuff like that, and they allow dogs to come onto that land, but they're what you call it, they're on a leash. But for farmland and hills and stuff like that, what we have seen is recreational users bringing their dogs onto these places. With years, we've been asking them to keep them on the lead. That hasn't worked because as soon as they get your back turned, the dog is off the leash again. And from my own personal point of view, I'm talking to farmers from Donegal right down to West Kerry here. A lot of people have asked people to put their dogs on the leashes.
Yeah.
And their backs are turned, they're left off the leash. They can see their sheep being run or hounded into cliffs over rocks.
No, I've seen it myself. I know, you're right. But John Joe, just in relation to that, I mean, obviously we already see a lot of greenways going through farmland and we're likely to see more. And maybe that's a bargaining chip farmers might have in their hands. Would you also ban dogs from, you know, greenway walkways that go through or are adjacent to farmland and hills?
Well, what we see with greenways, and from my understanding of it, these areas are well fenced off, you know. Mm. There, you have a greenway going through, there's a tall fence on each side in a lot of cases. But, look, on top of that as well, I've been talking to people that walk greenways, both women, men and children, and they said they cannot enjoy the greenways because you have a group of people as well coming onto the greenways, bringing four or five dogs with them. They're left off the leash. They're jumping up on everybody. People are frightened of dogs.
But do you know the one thing I've seen in relation to that, John Joe, is dog owners who love their dogs don't get that. They don't actually understand that large swathes of the population either don't want their dirty spit or asses near them, or they might actually be afraid of them. But it seems it seems to be some sort of a... thinking in a bubble, if that makes sense. They don't get that. You know, I've seen...
They don't get it.
I've seen me with Hudson on the beach when dogs shouldn't actually be on the beach. And by the way, I'm no goody two-shoes. Let me make that very clear. And then people are laughing and cajoling as the dog runs up and jumps up on him. And I'm like, seriously? Yes. Is there no sort of social awareness here that that's not for everyone? That, you know, it's not fun?
Yeah, and you've hit it right in the head there. Is we need to educate these people. There needs to be a proper campaign, not a Mickey Mouse campaign that we see at the moment. We need to start in schools, in primary schools. Niamh Monaghan there, a farmer from County Monaghan, she's a school teacher. She has taken upon herself, and there's another lady there, I can't think of her name now, but she is involved with Agri Kids. She set up a little company that goes into schools that teaches kids about the awareness of farming and the benefits of farming, but also she's going to go on a campaign to educate the kids from a very young age on the responsibility of owning a dog and what's expected of you.
Rightio.
And she's doing that from...
We look forward to that. So, that's down the country. Maybe it'll be rolled out. John Joe Fitzgerald, Vice President of the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association. Thank you. Any views on relations that either within the farming community or outside the farming community, please get them into us. 086 60 25,000. Now, on Sunday the 20th of July, so this is Sunday week, there is a Tower to Town Challenge. It's a 10-mile challenge and 5K lag walk run. Both of them start at 11 a.m. You can register online at Malin RNLI's Facebook page. Excuse me. The challenge is €25. The 5K, €10 for a family, €20. And of course, it's to raise money for the RNLI, isn't it? So that's the Tower to Town Challenge, Sunday week, 10-mile challenge and 5K lag walk run. Both nice early start, but not too early, 11 a.m. Get onto the Malin RNLI Facebook page and register there. Now, there's a quiz night taking place in Clohan Centre tonight. It's in aid of baby Oran McGinley, who's the son of Linda and Bernard McGinley, of course, from Kilty Ferrigal in Glenfinn. Oran is going to be 7 months old tomorrow and suffers from a serious congenital heart disease. And since birth, he's spent all his time in both the National Maternity Hospital and the Children's Hospital in Crumlin, where he awaits major open heart surgery. So any funds raised will be to help his parents to cover travel and accommodation and expenses, as Oran's recovery will take place over a long period of time. So firstly, happy birthday to Oran. He's 7 months tomorrow. Lots of love to Linda and Bernard as well. Very, very tough on mums and dads and the whole family as well, as Oran does his little battle. It's a quiz night. It's in Clohan Centre tonight, 8:30 p.m. Refreshments served, and a raffle will take place on the night as well. So it's teams of four people, or five, and it's €5 admission per team. And as I say, lots of fun. People love quizzes, don't they? And it's a little bit like other things we're talking of. It's about raising money for We Oran, but it's also about supporting the McGinley family and showing we care. So if you can get along for an hour or two to the Clohan Centre tonight, it's a quiz night, €5 per team, which is really quite modest. And there's going to be refreshments served and a raffle taking place on the night. You might hear in the distance instruments. Can you hear them? They're warming up. They're going to be in with us in the next hour. I've always said if I came into money, I'd buy a massive secure plot of land and let people bring their dogs to have their freedom. But that's like a zoo, isn't it? I don't know. You see, people want the freedom on their terms. Sounds like a good idea, but, you know, often we want to go where other people don't want us to go. That's not against dog owners. That's just the way it is. I live beside a blue flag beach. Never more dogs since they took in the laws, but nothing enforced. Of course not. It's a load of nonsense. Do you know the funny thing is the people that listen to that are the responsible dog owners as well, which are in the majority. 99% of dog owners are wonderful people who take wonderful care of their dogs. Not a bother out of them at all. It's lovely to see them. But the 1% that think that everyone loves their dogs as much as they do, they're the ones that aren't going to take guidance or a request not to go on to a blue flag beach, you see. And that tarnishes the reputation of all the wonderful dog owners that are very compliant. What about untagged sheep on regional roads? Are there untagged sheep on regional roads? Let me know. I don't know if that's against the law, is it? 086 60 25,000. Not much use if they're untagged because you can't do anything with them. Can you claim headage on them or... payments if they're not tagged? I don't know.